You're listening to Pastures of Plenty, a history of California farm workers. I'm Rachel Ann Goodman. The story of California's Filipino farm workers starts like many U.S. immigration stories, sailing to a new land for a better life. But there's a plot complication. The new country has colonized their old country, the Philippines, and so the immigrants are really migrants.
It would be like restricting immigration from people from Nebraska. I mean, the Philippines was part of the United States.
The work, however, is unambiguously hard. Cutting asparagus, harvesting rice, hoeing beets, picking grapes, harvesting lettuce and tomatoes. All as a means to an end. A better life in the land of liberty. The big Filipino immigration began in the 1920s because the immigration laws cut off the supply of Japanese farm workers, says historian Sandy Leiden.
So they're coming in the 20s. They are Roman Catholic. A lot of them spoke English, were educated in schools, actually, that we had set up in the Philippines, that taught them about brotherhood, equality, fraternity, and all the good stuff they learned in those schools.
By 1930, some 30,000 Filipinos were laboring in California. Thousands of them landed in Central California's Salinas Valley. It was the birthplace of John Steinbeck, and it was also called the salad bowl of the world, for the vast lettuce crops that blanketed the valley floor. Al Baguio is the son of Filipino farm workers. While delving into his own family history, Al came across this diary of an old family friend.
Okay, this is an excerpt from George Montero's biography. When he was 20 years old, he left Manila by ship on March 1st, 1930. I was very surprised that there was no electricity at the labor camp that we were staying in. They still use outdoor toilets and kerosene lamps. There are about 50 to 60 men in the camp, all single men. I was the youngest, so they called me Kid. My first work was thinning lettuce with a short-handled hoe. We worked 4 hours the first day at 45 cents an hour, and was my back sore. There was no work the next day. I heard about the riots during the winter that occurred in Watsonville, but we were not harassed in Salinas. During the Great Depression, my wages dropped to 30 cents an hour. And then I went to San Jose, hoping that the pay would be better. Instead, it was worse. I was working picking peas for only 10 cents an hour. When I returned to Salinas, I worked with Mosquito Brothers, Marcelino and Pio, who were the labor contractors. Wages then were 25 cents an hour, and I earned an extra $5 as their bookkeeper.
By the time Al Baguio started working in the lettuce fields in the 1950s, wages had improved to $1 an hour, but the work was still unchanged.
When I was growing up, I worked in the fields during the summer, and we had to use those short hoes, what they call cortitos, and that was backbreaking work to, when you're thinning lettuce. The working conditions were deplorable. Like, I can remember getting up at 6:30 in the morning, be out in the field by 7 o'clock, then work from 7 to 10. And then we took a 15-minute break. Then we had lunch for an hour. Then we worked from 1 to 6 o'clock at night with a 3 o'clock break.
When the 6-day work week was over, Al Baguio hung around the labor camps. The most popular festivity was cockfighting and, of course, the betting that went along with it. Al's uncle was famous for his prize-winning roosters.
I was 14, 15 years old. Oh, yeah, my uncle was a famous... he raised these fighting chickens, and they treated them better than some of their kids sometimes. And they had chicken fights every Sunday. But one time, I remember the daughter of the labor camp owner and my very close friend were riding bicycles, and they had a chicken fight. And there was a guy that must have lost about $2,000 or $3,000. And what happened is that he got mad, shot the owner of the winning chicken, and took off with all the money. And he drove right past us. And we saw the gun sticking out of the window. We all dove under the car. And I never saw a place empty so fast in all my life.
Running a close second after cockfights were the dance halls. Because there were so few Filipino women around, The farm workers invited white women to come dance with them.
And boy, oh boy, does that fly loose.
Historian Sandy Lydon.
The most violent anti-Filipino race riot in the history of the United States was in Watsonville, California in January of 1930. And that was over a taxi dance hall which employed Caucasian women. The white men in town felt that that was inappropriate. And so they eventually went out and did some looting and some burning and eventually killed someone, killed Furman Tobera in his bunk.
Here's ethnic studies professor Wayne Maeda from Sacramento State University.
Well, there were dynamitings in Stockton and riots in Exeter and, quite a bit of vigilante activities against Filipinos because they probably more than the other groups crossed the color line in terms of marriage and dating. Mm-hmm. And that created lots of consternation in parts of California.
Andy Imatan arrived from Manila in the early 1960s and helped found the United Farm Workers with Cesar Chavez. Imatan says as soon as he heard about the laws forbidding Filipinos from marrying whites, he committed his life to helping the man achieve justice.
You know, some people try to avoid the issue, putting me under the rug, but this, I want to talk about it because it's unfortunate that the whole generation of people were subjected to the anti-miscegenation law, which was the cruelest law that any human being can ever devise for another human being.
O bayan kong laging nagtitiis, nagmimithi ng paglaya sa ibang bansa, lumuluha. O babae, walang kibo.
The laws did not prevent Filipinos from marrying each other. Maria Madalora came to Watsonville, California from the Philippines in the 1940s to join her husband, who was working in the strawberries.
I was born in the Philippines and my name is, they call me Maria. When I came here, I start picking strawberries.
Had you done farm work in the Philippines, in the farming or no?
No, I don't I don't do nothing.
And then you came to America and you picked strawberries.
I came to America, I work so hard. I pick strawberries in the daytime. And then after 6 months, I apply to dry apple. Mm-hmm. I start on the dry apple. And then the dry apple is just only 6 months. That's why I apply again at the cannery. Uh-huh. At the cannery, I think they pay $1 1 year, then they add $1.25. Mm-hmm. And then when my husband died, I just feel so sorry because mm-hmm. I work day and night. I was alone. I work on the cannery at night. I come home at 2 o'clock or 3 o'clock in the morning. I cry first. Then after I cry, I sleep. I wake up early again. I go work on the field because I want my children to go through college.
During the Depression, farm worker wages in California dropped to 10 cents an hour. It wasn't until the 1960s and 70s that they began to catch up to other work. Even today, out of every dollar you spend for a head of lettuce, 20 cents ends up in the farmer's pocket, and only 6 cents is paid to the farm worker.
We strike because they cut the wages, and we don't like it. The strike is 1985. That's why they close where I work.
When the Watsonville cannery closed in the 1980s, Maria went back to farm work. And even now, in her 80s, she still works to help bring meals to elderly people in her community.
I pray hard that God will give me strong to work. God help me. I'm strong. I make them go through college.
Maria Madalora did end up sending 2 children through college. A few miles away in Watsonville, Jeff Tagami's parents had the same dream for him, to get out of the fields.
Well, when my grandparents first came in 1924, they sharecropped strawberries in Davenport.
Jeff Tagami's mother, Judith Balsena, was from the farming town of Lompoc on the central coast of California. In the 1930s, the ratio of Filipino men to women was 20 to 1. For a lovely young woman, suitors were no problem.
Of course, there were many, and they would come over to the house, and my grandfather, after a while, just got sick and tired of them, so he put up a sign, and he said, you know, what four you want, with the number four.
What four you want, yeah.
One of her admirers was none other than Carlos Bulacan. Bulacan was the first writer to speak out on behalf of his fellow Filipino farm workers, using his sharp wit to blast the growers and politicians who mistreated them.
Carlos Bulacan was one of the first generation of Filipino Manongs, Pinoys, to come to America, first stopping off in Seattle. And he did work in the fields, but became ill, you know, with TB. Back then they called it consumption. And so because he could not work, he spent a lot of time in the hospital. And with that free time, he would get books, you know, have books delivered from the library, and he'd read and read. And after a while, began to actually teach himself how to read and write, and became a writer. And wrote short stories, wrote America's in the Heart. You know. They used to have what was known as sweetheart dances, and this is a way in which they could raise money, not only for themselves, but for organizations, benevolent organizations. And this is actually where she met Carlos Bulacan. He was emceeing for the night, and met her. And was, of course, she's very beautiful as a young woman, and so he's very enamored with her, I suppose, like many.
After leaving Lompoc, Carlos Bulacan settled in Seattle, Washington, but kept her memory in his heart. Here's a letter that he wrote her during World War II.
Dear Judith, I have been wondering how you are now that the war is here to scatter our lives again. The other day I passed through your town, but I did not stop because it was already dawn. We stopped for a cup of coffee, but I thought of you. I thought that you were still living in Lompoc. Through the worry and anxiety, the fear and anger runs my memory of you in Lompoc. For one thing, it was in Lompoc where I first lived in America, although I was still young and somewhat ignorant. I knew that it was the beginning of a long and heartless search for a better understanding of and foothold in America. And here we are again, Judith. I have lived in a terrible world. Yes, my generation has suffered in a civilization of lies. I am only sorry that I will not live to see the day when every man is free to smile and to love and to lift his eyes to the sky. But I will die with the thought that while living, I have done the best I could with my generation in the conquering of our death-ridden environments and in fostering a genuine fellowship among all peoples, so that there will be no more warmongers to terrorize our world. I like Lompoc. I have always thought of it as my hometown. I remember the low brown hills, the wide fertile plains, and the sea fringes there. I remember the little people there and all the wonderful things they could do to make me laugh or cry. You, too, are wonderful. You and Lompoc. You and America. Is not this something? But now I must stop because I am in a great hurry. Besides, it is getting dark and I am a little hungry. I hope you will always be healthy and happy. And I hope now that I wrote this letter that you will grow up to look into the world we never made. Sincerely, Carlos Bulacan.
That future for Judith contained a husband and a family sharecropping strawberries in the town of Watsonville. Here's her son, Jeff Tagami.
These people faced a lot of discrimination, you know, and really paved the path for future generations. And I think that many new immigrants that come and try to achieve the American dream, so-called American dream, find it probably easier, but then not knowing the history, right? Not realizing that there were people who came before them who set that path, you know, and probably a good example is many new immigrant Chinese who come, and when they hear about the railroads and the gold mines, they don't believe that's real. They think it's a myth because it happened, you know, so long ago.
After toiling in the fields for many years, Jeff Tagami went to college. Today, he's a poet and a professor of English at Cabrillo College in Aptos, California. Like so many immigrants, the second generation had finally achieved what the first was denied, says Andy Emmaton.
You know, when they came to the United States, they were poor. When they died, they were as poor as when they came to the United States. And that's how many years? 50 years? Working hard? I was listening to the deliberation in the meeting, and they were telling about being sprayed with pesticides while they are working, very low wages. They were not included in any labor laws. I thought that the United States lead in everything, actually, and I thought there was equal rights to all the workers. Unfortunately, it wasn't.
The thing that makes this part of the story so remarkable is they believed it. They bought it. They bought the idea because they read it in the school books that hard work will get you somewhere, and that America is a land of opportunity and equality. Every year during the 1980s, the coroner in the county of Santa Cruz would go in, would have to get guys that had dropped in the field and died while working. 80-year-old men standing down on a corner, getting on the truck and going out and working in the morning. They wouldn't take. They didn't want to get involved on welfare. They didn't want to take any handouts, and they were so proud. The thing that's so striking to me is that despite getting their heads beat in, literally, by thugs and policemen and everyone else during the 20s and 30s, and even the 40s, you'd see these guys with this very strong belief that they were going to make this work. This was going to work. By God, it was supposed to work. It's going to work. And that optimism that they got early.
You have been listening to Pastures of Plenty, a history of California's farm workers. I'm Luis Valdez. You know, the Filipino farm workers were some of the most passionate leaders in the farm worker movement of the 1960s, eventually helping Cesar Chavez start the United Farm Workers Union. Most of those old guys are gone by now, so it's great to hear their stories brought back to life. The stories of the first Asian and Filipino immigrants in California can be read like a book on how not to treat foreign workers. Yet despite their many hardships in the fields, they brought new foods, new skills, and a new perspective on what it means to be American. Please visit our website at www.coastridge.org. This project is made possible, in part, by a grant from the California Council for the Humanities as part of the Council's statewide California Stories Initiative. The Council is an independent nonprofit organization and a state affiliate of the National Endowment for the Humanities. Pastures of Plenty was produced by Rachel Ann Goodman, consulting by Claire Schoen, website by Jay Molina and Joan Andrews. This has been a Coast Ridge production. Thanks for listening.